Hi, I'm Ruthie, and I have a recorder. Tune in Wednesdays from 4 to 5 to Out There. We'll meet people and plants around the streets and paths of Northampton, and we'll think about ways we can share the world. Here on Valley Free Radio, or archived online at weatherbeer.com/out there. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if they laugh at us. Let them take the bus and need a sickle for us. They can have a Cadillac and T-1-2, but give me my rocket bicycle for two. And indeed, it is Wednesday, March 21st. 2018. According to the calendar, yesterday was the first day of spring. Good thing there's a calendar to notify me of that. The promo for Out There is, what do you call it? It's false. It says I got a recorder. Well, I don't. I pulled my recorder out of my pocket earlier in the week to record something, and gosh darn it, the thing was broken. I must have stepped on it or sat on it or something. Anyway, I'm on the hunt for a new recorder, a small one that can fit in my pocket easy. So what I have for today is some old clips, maybe some new stories. I think I'm going to play later in the show an interview with my dad talking about donating blood. I recorded it back in February, I guess, when I was there. My dad's a super donor. That means he's donated 5 gallons of blood in the last, 8 years, I think. Anyway, I'll let him talk about that more a little later. And what else? I know what I forgot to mention last Wednesday on the show, that so many things happened in one day. I couldn't remember everything, but I was doing my route last Wednesday with my friend Miguel, who was on the show last Wednesday. He was a live guest, which makes me remember. You can always listen to past editions of Out There at weatherbeer.com/out there. Anyway, so last Wednesday I was doing my route, and Miguel was accompanying me. And we were going down Route 9 by the high school. It was a little bit after 2. I guess school had gotten out pretty recently. But as we come to that intersection with Elm, North Elm, where there's a crosswalk that lots of students use to get from the school to the other side of the road, as we came across the intersection, we saw there was a body down in the middle of the crosswalk. And my first thought was, oh no, a pedestrian or, high school student has been hit by a car. But there weren't any cars, right next to the person. All the cars were, sort of stopped in their positions. And there was a man that, went over, and he was, on one knee, kneeled next to her. And as we went up, he was like, she had a seizure. I think she had a seizure. And someone said, yeah, I saw her go down. She went down hard. And so, Miguel and I got off our bikes, and I don't know, I guess we were just, there with the girl. And then some motorists started to drive around, 5 feet from where she was lying in the middle of the crosswalk just to get by on Route 9. So then I moved my bike and trailer to kind of block traffic. I wasn't really sure what was the best thing to do. And then someone yelled, turn her on her side. And about that time, we sort of turned her on her side. And at that time, she started to come to. Her face was kind of bloody where she had hit the pavement. And then this other woman came from the high school side, and she saw the girl and ran over. One of the girls' teachers at the high school, I guess. And the girl sort of just looked very, very confused and stunned, and was able to sit up, and people helped her to the side of the road. Then Miguel and I went on our way. And then the ambulance and the police car came with their sirens. And then I thought, oh, that poor girl. She, now she now there's all that commotion. And anyway, I wasn't the point of that story. I don't know what it was, except for it was just a recollection of that moment of being like, I don't know what to do. How can I be helpful here? And then also something that's been on my mind a bunch lately is when thinking about alternatives to calling the police and when is it appropriate to call the police or not, or like, can you just call for an ambulance? Cause it might be, I don't know, it might be a little less stressful if you can get medical help without police coming. Or like if you can call the fire department separate. Anyway, more will be figured out on that front. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, and I'm going to play next this conversation with my dad about donating blood. My dad lives in Eastern Kentucky. It's a really rural area. So for him to donate blood, as you'll hear, he has to literally like search it out.
Is the super donor a special term for the medic?
Yeah.
It means, what does a super donor mean?
Yeah. Every 56 days you can give.
Okay.
And so every 2 months, and there's only 12 months in a year.
Oh, sorry. I'm going to cut that clip. I also wanted to mention that my dad's 82 years old and healthy.
So you can't give any, if you really time it, you can give six.
You can give six times a year.
Yeah, you give six times a year if you just get your date, you know, you get your dates lined up. If you lived in Knoxville, you could. Because you could go down to the medic building and do it. But here, you whenever the mobile unit shows up and where it shows up, you don't know. It might be Pineville Library, it might be Middleborough Walmart, it might be Tazewell. That's medic out of Knoxville. Don't know why they come to Kentucky. It's the only county they come to in Kentucky.
It's
Bell County. East Kentucky Blood Center covers everything else out of Lexington. They'll come to Williamsburg, which is where I went this last time. They'll go to Harlan. They'll go to Barberville. So you get online and you see where the mobile units come and when you get close to your 2 months. And then you figure out what day of the week is that, what's my work schedule. And so, you know, after a while you learn to figure it out. So a super donor, then it becomes five out of six. That's one way they do it. They used to do it by quantity. When you'd go, they've changed their computers. Either the printout they'd give you back, they had your information, you get a copy of it. At the top, it would have your donated volume in gallons. And so you could be an 8-gallon giver.
For like a lifetime?
On their computer.
Okay.
So you got to figure then. Traditionally, blood is called a pint, but you know it's a volume cc something or other, but pint is normal. Okay, how many pints in a gallon?
8 pints in a gallon.
8 pints. Okay. So to be a 5-gallon giver, that's 40. 8 times 5. And it's 40 units. That's 40 units. And you can get six, but five. So that's 8 years.
Yeah.
So to be a gallon giver, or, you know, or a 5-gallon giver. They don't do that anymore, but I'm 10 or more. Yeah.
So when you give blood, like, you got to track down the place to give it. It's not like you just, they don't come to you. You got to put some effort into tracking this down.
You got to track it down.
How far would you say you drive on average to go give blood?
The closest is 15 miles, Pineville, when they're there. Middlesbrough, you know, we won't go over the mountain, we'll go around. It'll be 25.
A 45-minute hour's drive.
Yeah, between 45 minutes to an hour. I go to Harrogate, Tazewell sometime.
So how long have you been giving blood regularly?
Medic came to Jellicoe up in the hospital clinic. That would be 77. Uh-huh. And this is 18, so that's 40, 41 years.
Right. Yeah, what are your motivations? You're not supposed to ask why. So what are your motivations?
What are my motivations? That's right. Yeah. When you start, it's just sort of what everybody's doing. Mm-hmm. They come to the hospital and the staff and everybody goes, and it's in the category of a good thing and a good deed. Mm-hmm. And once you get started, if you want to talk motivation without this, without sounding what? Saintly?
Do-gooder or whatever, yeah.
No, saintly. I do associate it with how do you live a Christian life, and if it, in one sense, it has all kinds of theological coloring, mm-hmm. of Christ gave his blood that others might live, and it fits that definition. Mm-hmm. And so there's this aspect to it. It's not exactly a holy crusade, but yeah, what can you do to help other people? And you can do this or do that, but some of this is really specific. You know, you can give money to some mission project.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You can give your blood so somebody stays alive, you know.
Yeah.
That's a much closer connection.
Yeah.
That's a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a blood transfusion yourself?
No. Uh-huh. No.
Once when I was severely anemic and the doctor recommended a blood transfusion for mm-hmm. me, it was the first time I'd actually really deeply, intimately, emotionally thought uh-huh. about it. And I think when you talk about the spiritual aspect of it, thinking about receiving a blood transfusion really hit home to me how the blood inside of all of us is all the same. We all are one.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, mm-hmm. that, you talk about blue bloods and all other mm-hmm. kind of stuff. No, it's uh-huh. they don't track that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one sort of real personal connection on that. This was had church in Letcher County at Sandlick, a family Mason, and Nikki and Belinda. Belinda was the older daughter, remembers, in the family. And after he moved here, she grew up and went to UK and was a writer. And she got pregnant and had problems and had a blood transfusion and got AIDS. And so her daddy was Paul Mason, a state senator. So they passed Belinda's Law, which changed the whole process of donation to you have 1,000 questions of your sex life with a male, with a female, anytime, have you ever been, have you ever paid? I mean, just it was down a list. And this is it not only was in Kentucky, but it changed the whole of how to protect your blood supply from AIDS. Yeah. They can test for it, but most of it is just a long questionnaire.
Uh-huh.
Have you been out of the country, which would be a malaria issue? Have you Crutchfield something or other, mad cow disease in England? And just all kinds of, yeah, it's like every time you go, both you and the interviewer say, okay, here we go, we got the sex questions.
Uh-huh.
And down you go. Yes, no, just, yeah.
So when you give blood, I used to try and give blood when I was younger, and I would always get rejected because my iron levels were too low,
mm-hmm.
or my hematocrit levels were yeah. too low. I've been able to give blood like maybe 2 times in my life.
Okay.
But I guess people are different, huh? You can give blood every 2 months, and your blood has the strength to, and your body has the strength
to take extra
it.
Iron.
Uh-huh.
you know, I was marathoning and giving blood. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, I'd have to, when I was running marathon, I'd have to figure, now, am I going to give before or after the marathon? I mean, surely you don't want it before, too soon before.
Yeah.
And so you got 2 months. And so the ideal date was halfway.
Uh-huh.
A month after the last marathon, a month before the next one. And when I regularly marathon and I take iron supplement. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I still do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because I got borderline once, and that fixes your problem, man. So I take extra iron.
So you, when's the last time you tried to give blood?
Well, it's been now 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, the East Kentucky people came to Williamsburg, and they had incentive this time. You're going to get a hoodie. A long sleeve hoodie.
Not just a t-shirt, but a hoodie.
Wow, yeah. I mean, no, t-shirt, but a long hoodie. No, I didn't care one way or the other. I said, Chris, you want the hoodie? I'll get an extra large for you.
You should have enough clothes by now.
I got enough. Yeah. But anyway, so I went down, and it was one of those cold, 0 days, cold day. It was cold. But so I went in and signed it and did the paperwork and I got rejected once for low pulse rate.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was under 50.
How long ago was that? Like in the last few years? Or?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was 6 months ago, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I said, can I just go out and run around the thing a little bit to raise it? And they said, nope, you better come back in 3 days or something, but there's a mobile unit when you come back. And they do your thing, they take your temp, whatever, and the lady was there, took my blood pressure and didn't say a thing.
Uh-huh.
And fill out the forms, and then you go to the people who are going to take your hematocrit in the little box room. So he goes through all of that, and we go down the chart, and we all this, and you take your hematocrit, and then he says, well, I'm going to take your blood pressure, which is normal. And then he says, when was the last taken? I said, well, she just took it. And he said, I'm sorry, but it's too high.
Your blood pressure is too
high. Yeah, blood pressure is too high. He said, this second time, your distolic, your lower one, was okay. It was underneath, but it was still over 190.
Over 190?
Yeah, it was just off the chart.
Huh.
I said, what's going on? I said, I'm feeling fine.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, he said, you can come back in 3 days as a 72-hour. I said, you're going to be here in 3 days.
That probably made your blood pressure rise.
Yeah, bring it up. Yeah, it's already strange. But he said, but you can get a hoodie. You've been here. You have good intentions or something. I said, no thanks, buddy. I said, why didn't they tell me when she first took it? You know, outside there. Probably didn't want to embarrass you, say you weren't qualified. I said, then you called me in and took my... At least I got a hematocrit. I said, well, give me, what's my hematocrit? He said, yeah, you're doing good. It's 15-something. I said, the best it's ever been. Thank you.
So then this thing with your blood pressure. So,
sorry, I meant to cut that clip. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. That was an interview with my dad about giving blood. Have a little bit more of that I might play. My dad's a super donor, if you didn't hear. So I'm reading this article from March 1st, 1942, in the weeks after the Pearl Harbor attack, many Americans rushed to donate blood. But when African Americans did so, the American Red Cross told them their blood was not wanted. After an outcry from the black community, the Red Cross lifted its ban, but restrictions remain in place, says the article from 1942. And according to the Army Surgeon General, James McGee, at that time, blood from white donors and blood from black donors must be kept separate, and transfusions with blood from black donors would be given only upon request. Now, I've heard about white soldiers in World War II who refused transfusions of blood from black soldiers and preferred to die instead. Part of that irony of this is that the whole idea of a blood bank was pioneered by an African-American physician, Charles Drew. under the restrictions of 1942, he wouldn't even be allowed to treat white soldiers or to even donate to his own, to the blood bank without restriction. I think it's all mixed together now. let's see. I'm going to play a song. Yes. Which one? Alicia Keys, Hallelujah.
There's a hole in my heart I've been hiding. I've been strong for so long that I'm blind. Is there a place I can go where the lonely river flows, where fear ends and faith begins? Hallelujah, hallelujah, let me in. I've been praying, but I'm paying for my sins. Won't you give me a sign before I lose my mind? Oh, hallelujah, let me in. Every step makes me think that I'm closer, but somehow I just never arrive. When all hope disappears, please protect me from my tears.
Your bike, how to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it, or maybe you know already but you just need to borrow a bike specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab
almost every Saturday since 2004 from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions
and your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Hey!
Ugh, frustrating day today. The line shut down and we spent 2 hours clearing plastic bags from machinery.
Wait, what?
Folks use plastic bags to toss recyclables and the bags clog the machinery, like rope in a vacuum cleaner or lawnmower.
Don't put the brakes on recycling. Avoid bags, keep it loose. Learn more at springfieldmrf.org.
Reduce, reuse, and recycle. Take the time to recycle, cause we only have one Earth.
The thing about bags reminds me, so I empty the public trash and recycling bins in downtown Florence every time they fill up. And someone in the last month has taken to put in their bags, just like Ziploc bags, like plastic bags, candy wrapper, like the Zone. I think it's the Zone candy bar wrapper bags. Lots of wrappers and bags. They've been putting it in this recycling bin. And just one specific bin in front of Birds. And so I finally, last week, I put a sign on the bin saying, no bags or wrappers. And I stapled one of the wrappers from the Zone to the sign as an example. And so then yesterday when I picked up the recycling, I think they read the sign because they didn't put bags and wrappers in that recycling bin. However, the one in front of the recycling bin in front of the post office was full of their bags and wrappers. Anyway, I'll keep chasing my tail on that one. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, also streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org and broadcasting at 103.3 FM out of Northampton, actually Florence, Massachusetts. And I'm going to play some more of my dad, Jim Woodring, talking about... All right, so he talked about giving blood and being a blood donor and what all that means earlier in the show. And now there's a few more minutes of him talking about his blood pressure and trying to outwit the medic team so that he can give blood and what he's noticed about the relationship between his blood pressure and heart rate. I think this part might be more interesting to people who are more interested in these things.
So then this thing with your blood pressure. So you were telling me you've been doing some observations about blood pressure and pulse and trying to work the system.
No, well, yes and no. I said, okay, if it's that, maybe there's some red flags going on here. You know, what's going on? So I went down to clinic, went to Clearfield, and he said I got hypertension. I told them what happened. So they took my blood pressure, and it was relatively normal, a little, 150 or something or other, but nothing, not 200. And I talked to the PA about it, Maybe we should or shouldn't raise your dose. I'm taking the minimum of 5 milligrams something instead of you could get a 10. So the PA recommended that can you take your blood pressure? I said, yeah, I got a wrist thing. And so monitor 2 or 3, 4 times a day. Just
a day?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Monitor a day, just track it. Track it 3 times a day. So I said, okay, and then come back in a week or 2 or 3. It's 3. See what's turned out and bring your thing with you so we can see how accurate it is compared with ours. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been doing. But so I'll take my blood pressure when I get up in the morning, which is before I've had the medication, which should be 24 hours, should have something, but I haven't seen any difference. Uh-huh. And before I go to bed, and then once or twice during the day. And sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down. And the only pattern, I told you, is there seems to be an inverse relationship with my pulse. Uh-huh. That often the higher my pulse rate, the lower my blood pressure. Uh-huh. It seems to be a pattern.
So this blood pressure medication, you were saying that you were reading in the Journal of the American Medical Association about recommendations and standards. Can you share some about that?
Yeah. Of course, the JAMA is big-time stuff.
Yeah.
All this research and stuff, and American Heart Association or whoever it is, cardiology or somebody, the big-time one, their recommendations of what defines hypertension used to be 140 over... 70 or something. I can't remember the lower one. If you're over 140, you needed to be, check your blood pressure and probably get on medication because your risk was increasing. Uh-huh. And that had been the standard for as long as I can remember. Uh-huh. And just last week, JAMA said they changed the recommendations down to 130 over, must be 65 or 70. I can't remember what that is on the bottom. And so when I was averaging about 140, I was borderline and had some incidents and thought, you know, I just better do something about it, which was true because when I went to the eye doctor, said, you got hypertension. You got blood vessels in the back of your eye bursting. That's how you diagnosed hypertension. So I was borderline at 140. Now I'm high risk because if I'm still averaging 140, they moved the standards down 10 points because it's 130. And as the article and the commentaries in the journal say, that's the recommendations, but a couple of things. Number one, suddenly if 10 million new people high risk for coronary events with high blood pressure. And so I don't know what the influences are on the drug companies, but it's windfall all of a sudden if the docs are going to accept this. And then you have all these people who thought they were doing okay, suddenly are told they're going to have a stroke. I mean, bang, bang.
Yeah.
You've been 1 week and you're okay. You've been the next week and you're going to die with a stroke because you're way over the, you know, I mean, and then some of the people in a journal evaluated the studies on which they based this recommendation. And the main criticism of their results was that it was a highly controlled study or studies. They had a lot of people, but it was highly controlled that whenever you went in to get your blood pressure checked, if you were part of the study, there was a certain protocol, and you had to be sitting quietly for 5 minutes before they take it. And if you've, as the man says, if you ever try to run a medical practice, you're moving patients. You don't have, you know, you come in for a checkup, they come through the door, and the nurse takes the blood pressure. And in most medical practices, you don't have 5 minutes for a patient to just sit there.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, they're seeing patients 5 minutes each. And medical offices aren't set up to have 5 minute beds out there just for blood pressure. And so part of the thing was this is unreal expectation because it doesn't fit clinical practice. Yeah, and so it's not the best research for basing such a heavy recommendation on. Hypertension, I've always felt, I never understood that it was a blanket recommendation. That even if, when it was 140, is that the standard for 20-year-olds and 80-year-olds? I never understood that. And I never really got an answer. I would have thought it would be age correlated somehow. Your mama, when she went to get her ears cleaned out, they took blood pressure, and she was 138. So suddenly she's under new recommendations. She should be on hypertension medication. You know, she's 86, 7, whatever. But she had the appropriate response. She said, well, that's pretty good for my age.
All right, that's the end of that conversation with my dad, Jim Woodring. He's from Bell County, Kentucky, in the southeastern tip, where Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia all come together. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. All that talk about hearts and blood pressure and blood whatever, I'm going to play Heart Lead Rebellion by Climbing Poetry.
When you walk, let your heart lead the way. Por más guerra que nos echen, más golpe que nos peguen, más abierta está esta mente para combatir la destrucción, aunque nos llenen de mentira. Con hambre queda el alma, silenciosa la violencia. Por eso es que se canta, que sigan disparando, el movimiento no se mata. Nacimos en la noche, crecimos en la palma, somos humo de la boca de un ancestro va flotando. Somos manos sanadoras, sonrisas escondidas donde balas hacen sonar. Somos peyote, somos coyote, somos estrella, somos tierra sin bandera, somos máquina, somos lágrima. We are beautiful, we're irrefutable, we are omnipotent, we're militant, resilient, we're autonomous, we are the consequence, we are consciousness. Arab Spring, 1 billion rising. Freedom schools, the maroons, rebellion thriving. We've been rising since the dawn of creation, sun. In the blood of our veins, liberation runs. From Muhammad Ali to Sundiata and Estrada, Rigoberta Menchu, and Nkrumah to Zapata, Mahatma Gandhi, Iko Madre's daughters, and every activist of the global intifada. From lunch counter sit-ins to million man marches, underground railroads, demonstrations, desert crossings, bodies on the line, stopping Amazon logging, Wangari's Green Belt movement to community gardens. Much love to the legacy of Harriet Tubman, alive in the veins of Patrice Marie Cullors. High five to Palestine and picket lines and Coach Obama. Respect to Grace Lee Boggs, big up to Troy Summer. Shout out to hunger strikers in Pelican Bay and the South Central farmers representing LA. Can't stop a Marcus Lee or the Brown Berets or Safe Street strong communities from making real change. Can't stop freedom and we on the train, bound for glory, new story, going all the way to the place where we can all attain emancipation from oppression. Break the chains from Haiti to Tibet and worldwide. Don't forget the resistance in our roots and resilience in our breath. In the blood of our veins, liberation runs. We are standing on the shoulders of the ancient ones. The power of the people is louder than the evil. Deceitful and coward, people in power. All power to the people, it's the hour of the peaceful. Freedom is ours, yeah, freedom is ours. The power of the people is louder than the evil. Deceitful and coward, people in power. All power to the people, it's the hour of the peaceful. Freedom is ours, yeah, freedom is ours. En la sangre un desierto, cruzando frontera como muerto pa' que no pillen la luz dentro del pecho. El movimiento es un techo y casa de ladrillo, ventana hacia el mañana aunque no tenga vidrio. Espíritu en carne viva que nos mate en cada día. Idea no se muere con sangre inocente. Ayahuasca en el vientre, historia insurgente. Zapatista y profesora, estudiante y rebelde, buscando libertad de sur al occidente. De Cuba hasta Chile, humano valiente, latinoamericano, africano del oriente, indígena y extraña, el irresidente. Somos billones, un movimiento independiente, buscando liberación dentro del corazón insurgente. The power of the people is louder than the evil. Deceitful and coward, people in power. All power to the people, it's the hour of the peaceful. Freedom is ours, yeah, freedom is ours. The power of the people is louder than the evil. Deceitful and coward, people in power. All power to the people, it's the hour of the peaceful. Freedom is ours, yeah, freedom is ours.
Sore, sore, sama sheri, fore, malabage, fore, sama sheri, sore, ulma sore, sore, sama sheri, fore, malabage, fore, sama sheri. Sama xol mo fess nege nege love la dench bu don xaliss du lu meuna xat ci bank ma gel mo riche tay la ma leet ni jant mangi dox mangi mi soxla ordonnance yow ya may reuy yaay sama caisse bi manke ya may may ya ma tax dox di pant ci sa xol la noy jaay sama tour sama sante ma love Bala manan ye demna ardo chala ma xale bi momé bala manan ye fala mire fala bardé chala ma mami momé xol ko mingi joy lu muy laaj bëggelam nax ko bu mu soufri xamal ko ya desi xolam. Tu es ma douce, ma bien-aimée, ma lingère.
bel yai ler tenekhol yai maren bel mbegel bineti yow monet man bel sama mbegel la don berel te yamadan obel samelo kanre kamayem yo bu sama furu farama gelam ci bingelaw melni xob di fere fere bi nga man jak la sago jeex manatuma dem ni bana bu keur tank yi bañ la min bi dama ma buñu fa nek di tete dara dara dara. I am yours, you are mine, in this love forever, you're the only one that I need, oh let's get together. Si xolam tu es ma douce ma bien-aimée ma linger belle yay l'air tenir xol yay ma reine belle mbegel bi ne ci yow moné ci man belle sama mbegel la don beure te yam da fena sama wurus bangi yalla joxma sama urul ay ni jege sin ma deila yay sama nenni tuti asaman si tawna bagela sax fi. We are living in the darkness but tomorrow gonna bring another day, the sun will shine, you hear me singing my love by my side. Makio buñu couple di fome ni xale Monday ba Sunday limay wut yow lay mat dama la noba 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 noba
yow la bëgg
bulus wax ko ko
sama xol li def def ci yow samay gëj won la ko bëgg dina
buy ñëw du tago
ku ne am nga ko love nga wëd nga day ko ko yow la bëgg
bulus wax ko ko
sama xol li def def ci yow samay gëj won la ko bëgg dina
buy ñëw du tago
ku ne am nga ko love nga wëd nga day ko ko yow la bëgg
bulus wax ko ko
sama xol di def def ci yow samay gëj won la ko bëgg dina
buy ñëw du tago
ku ne am nga ko love nga wëd nga day ko ko.
That was Dedeo Boubès out of Senegal with Belle. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Thanks for tuning in today. It's 4:45 in the afternoon. Democracy Now! Comes up at 5 o'clock. So the next thing I'm going to play is a little interview with a friend of mine from Knoxville, Tennessee, Mary Dennis Lynch. She's part of a Riverside Catholic worker down there, and she's about my dad's age, also in her 80s, and just, well, so I'm a trash hauler, and today I was picking up some trash and recycling and trash and just thinking about, well, it was some really trashy trash, let's just say there was a lot of trash, and just thinking about how a lot of people live today compared with how people lived 70 years ago. So here's Mary Dennis talking about how she grew up.
I'm really interested in how people share space, because I think that's like the key to the future of the planet, right?
Yes.
Because now it's like we all have this like individual space, and you know, what we think is normal about how much space a person should have has changed immensely. So when you were growing up,
okay,
tell me about your family.
I came to Tennessee in 1989, and I've worked with a variety of nonprofits, and most of my space has been one room, you know, with a little stove in it.
Uh-huh.
And another time where I lived, all the 2x4s were exposed.
Uh-huh.
It was not completed.
Yeah.
and I had no, I had electricity, but no running water.
So when you were little, you had, you said you had four sisters, or three sisters?
Three sisters younger. I was the oldest, and I have the most sense.
So there's like four of you in 5 years, and what was the house like? What was your bedrooms like?
Well, there were two bedrooms, and they were very tiny bedrooms. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the bedroom in the, where the double bed was for us, had one dresser, uh-huh. and that was it in that room. Uh-huh. So and mother and daddy had the other bedroom.
Okay, so the four of you girls were in one room.
Yeah, and two at the head of the bed and two at the foot of the bed.
Uh-huh. Until how old?
Well, I think I was in ninth grade,
uh-huh. you know. And what about, you also mentioned diapers. Like, how did your mom wash the diapers?
Well, they had electricity. Uh-huh. They had electricity. So there was a washing machine.
Oh, where did the water come from?
Well, then you had to, we had to pump it for, from a pump out and call it in. And we had a water bucket with a dipper.
Okay. So she did all the diapers in the wash basin. That she pumped the water with or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we just thought that was the way everybody
lived.
Well,
yeah, when my dad was growing up, like the parents had one room.
Because this was 1937 when I was born.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right.
My dad just celebrated. I'm 81 now.
Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. My dad's 82. Uh-huh. Like, well, let me ask you this. So how much clothes did you have? Like, how often did you do laundry? How often did you take a bath?
Okay. We had rules, and so you could wear two outfits a week. Uh-huh. So you could decide what 3 days you wanted to wear one of them and what uh-huh. two. So you could alternate. Uh-huh. So each one got to choose because uh-huh. we each had two outfits.
My dad only had one for the week, but maybe that's because he was a boy. Maybe the girls got two outfits for the week.
Oh, okay. And we had a lot of clothes donated. We had an aunt and uncle, mother's sister, lived in Chicago, and they had one girl. Uh-huh. And so they would send boxes of clothes to us.
Uh-huh, from the big city up north.
We're all frilly things, you know, that we never had. Uh-huh. And then our grandmother sewed clothes for us, uh-huh. you know. So it was just, and see, daddy was working in the field all the time. And then, see, I think we were like eight when daddy taught us how to milk the cows. Uh-huh. And so, and then, in order to, with our little hands, to strip them out, uh-huh. then if he could get, when he was teaching us, if he could get a half a cup of milk out uh-huh. at the end, then we didn't get our money. Uh-huh. And another thing, other kids at school got to go down to a grocery store and hang out, uh-huh. and we didn't.
Yeah.
And so on Friday nights, mother took us to school, and then she would give each one of us a quarter, uh-huh. and then, because we could get a treat or something. Uh-huh. And then she'd say, well, what? And see, we were so goofy, dumb. Uh-huh. Then she'd say, what if we put all our money together and get a special dessert for Daddy tonight, and we could all have some of it? Uh-huh. And we'd say, oh, that's a great idea. And we all handed our quarters back.
Aw, that's so sweet.
I mean, my mother was so psychological. She could get you to do anything, you know? We didn't have a lot of dolls. Uh-huh. And our garden, mother couldn't always get to the garden to do it, you know. And at that time, there were cucumbers, and they would get really big uh-huh. and turn orangish.
Yeah.
And she would give it, and we would have those for dolls. And she uh-huh. said, make doll babies out of them. And we would cut eyes, nose, and mouth and have these doll babies, uh-huh. you know. Mm-hmm. Which, okay, excuse me.
Yeah. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Iowa. There were 30 in our high school. Mm-hmm. There were 5 in my class. In my sister's class, 1 year later, there were 9. That was mm-hmm. a big class.
The thing about your mom giving you the quarters and then taking them back to buy dessert for your dad, it kind of reminds me of the U.S. government and taxes and the Y-12 and all that. You want to tie that together? I'm glad you caught on. So now you're not just like giving your quarters away to me so someone else can buy a bomb dessert and feed it to you.
Oh, dear. Golly. Oh.
Well, the next clip, Mary Dennis talks about Y-12 in Oak Ridge, Tennessee a little bit. She's been really involved in trying to shut that down and trying to raise awareness about all the taxpayer money that's going towards supporting that. Hopefully you're trying to divert your taxes from paying for war and pay for things that you really believe in. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. The interview was with Mary Dennis Lynch. She's a sister, a Catholic nun in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I talked with her when I was there in this past January or February. The next clip, I got one more clip before the hour is over and before Democracy Now! Comes on at 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. This next clip is from, this is just me in the next clip. When I went my last trip south in January, I usually take the bus and have layovers in New York and D.C. and maybe a few other places. But I had a layover in D.C., and so I was wandering around Capitol Hill.
Now I'm in Washington, D.C. It's a Saturday, so there's no congressional offices or anything open. It's just a quiet day on Capitol Hill. I'm kneeling in a park between Union Station and the Capitol. Facing the Capitol as the sun starts to go down. And since there's no people to talk to in the office, I think I'll just pray for the leadership of this country. For all the people who can be leaders and who are leaders, whose leadership isn't recognized but takes this country in a positive direction of love and healing, inclusion and acceptance. I pray for the leaders that they, that we all have soft hearts, humility and a willingness to listen to others. Be not afraid of speaking up for what we believe is right, and for calling out injustice and calling in people. As the sun sets through the oak trees, I want to pray for this planet. All the footprints that we make on it, the human beings make on it, and all the choices that we make that determines the fate of every little thing around us. I want to pray for the systems we've created that limit our choices. And I want to pray for the minds of the people. In my travels, I see how we're bombarded. Our eyes and our ears, our senses are bombarded with signs and sounds and letters and flashing lights. Advertisements and brand names say, buy this, watch this, do this, follow this, and you'll be happy, I don't know, entertained. I wish I could erase all the advertising and branding from the subway walls and train stations and highway billboards. I wish we could just see the trees, the sky, and each other. Feeling the winter wind and the sunlight as it slips below the horizon. Feeling the leaves blow off the trees and land in mid-January on your shoulder. There's so many things to feel that don't involve electricity, cars, movies, or restaurants. Feel the feel of the movement of your body going through space. Whatever speed you can move at. However up you can get, down you can go. That's my prayer, that we feel and be alive and love each other. All right. Sorry for all the wind in that clip. It was a windy January day. Thanks for listening to Out There today. I'm going to go out with Buffy St. Marie with Starwalker. You've been listening to Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton.
Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock.
Straight.